welcome to Talking History in our special Thanksgiving Day program. This is your host, Brian LeBeau of Creighton University's Department of History. In a few minutes, we will explore the origins and history of Thanksgiving with Matthew Dennis, professor of history at the University of Oregon, and get the opinion of members of the United American Indians of New England on our Thanksgiving holiday. But before we do that, let's look back at this week in history. The major event of this week in history occurred on November 29, 1947. Its history, however, begins nearly a century earlier, when Jews from around the world began a push, known as the Zionist Movement, to establish a national homeland. Their efforts went largely unheeded until Nazi persecution of the Jews created a sense of urgency. Then, on November 29, 1947, the United Nations voted to partition Palestine into separate Jewish and Arab sectors. The vote was opposed by neighboring Arab countries, and when, in 1948, the State of Israel was proclaimed, its Arab neighbors declared war. The rest is history. Turning to this week's history in the news, 12-year-old Hunter Scott of Pensacola, Florida, recently attracted the attention of historians and the U.S. Congress by reevaluating the worst sea disaster in U.S. naval history. His seventh-grade history project brought new evidence and a fresh interpretation to the torpedoed fate of the USS Indianapolis that sank in July of 1946. From the initial court-martial of the ship's captain, the Navy has maintained that Rear Admiral Charles B. McVeigh III was to blame for the incident that took the lives of 881 sailors. According to Scott, however, McVeigh had no way of knowing he was putting his crew at risk. Congress now plans to pardon McVeigh and honor the memory of the USS Indianapolis and her crew. And Millennium Fever is incubating in the most unlikely of victims, historians. As the end of the decade, century, and millennium draw near, historians are distressed over just how to label and understand the recent past. A frantic competition to definitively name the 90s and thus close 100 years of American history has begun. Should the 90s be the information age, the age of genetic engineering, the age of political scandal, or the age of the soaring stock market? Whatever it is they decide, this final decade of the 20th century will no doubt reflect the rapid change that has dominated the last 100 years of American history. You're listening to Talking History. Welcome back to Talking History. For the principal segment of our Thanksgiving show, I'm pleased to welcome Matthew Dennis, professor of history at the University of Oregon. Professor Dennis is the author of Cultivating a Landscape of Peace, Iroquois European Encounters in 17th Century America. He is currently working on a book on the cultural history of the public holidays in the United States titled Red, White, and Blue Letter Days, Identity, Memory, and the American Character. Welcome, Professor Dennis.
Hi, Brian.
Oh, thanks for joining us. Let me start off with something that you included in the material you sent me about your forthcoming book, in which you said that the National Thanksgiving Festival that we know today, the contemporary festival, is really a 19th century or Victorian invention. Now, that's news to some of us who thought really it dated to 1621. What do you mean by that?
Well, we can date, you know, the first Thanksgiving to 1621. In a sense, but the reason we do that is really because certain reformers, especially in the 19th century, wanted to gesture back to that event in order to do certain things in the present. So in that way, we really see the Thanksgiving that we know today emerge in a later time, but again gesturing to an earlier time in the 17th century.
Go ahead.
Well, the past, it doesn't necessarily tell us anything unless we ask. And people like Sarah Josepha Hale, a woman editor and reformer of the early 19th century, was trying to figure out what was going on in 19th century America. It was a time of great turmoil. Mm-hmm. Industrialization was beginning to emerge as a and change the face of American society and geography. Immigration was beginning to pick up.
How does all this come together in declaring a national holiday, though?
Well, what happened, I think, was that Sarah Josepha Hale and others drew from what they thought was a purer, a simpler, and nobler past. Their experience in New England. She came herself from New Hampshire, and they looked for. I mean, you know, this wasn't a cynical thing, but I think that what really popped out to them were these figures from the past who represented a certain piety and purity and earnestness, values on hard work, and they found the pilgrims as those kinds of heroes, and they found a way to then celebrate them at Thanksgiving.
Is this connected with the traditional New England holiday called Forefathers Day?
Well, that's what happened. Was there was a kind of competition in a sense. Both of those, there was a celebration that was really confined to New England, in which the New Englanders celebrated the landing of the Pilgrims in 1620, and that was really a holiday confined just to locals, and it would be celebrated in December rather than in November as traditional Thanksgiving. It was in many ways a kind of male holiday. It was usually celebrated by men's clubs over banquets and feasts, and women really had a secondary role. But increasingly, Thanksgiving became more and more important as a kind of tamer, domesticated version of that holiday, and one that celebrated domesticity, abundance, and the harvest, rather than that founding event, the landing at, the landing at Plymouth Rock, if that in fact ever happened.
So that emphasis on domesticity is what you meant by Victorian, then?
Well, yeah, it's a reformist holiday in that it tried to curb some of the unruly tendencies that were perceived to be about in 19th century society. So it brought the holiday from out of doors into people's homes. It made it from a kind of a boisterous male holiday into one that was feminized and controlled by. Well, by women, even in a patriarchal household, and it's one that was much calmer and more sedate, more controlled, which fit well with some of the values that middle class reformers in the 19th century were trying to encourage in the society.
Now, the date usually used for the first national holiday, if you will, is 1863. Why that date, and why would that be important for us to know?
Well, the first national celebration came in 1863, as you said, with a proclamation by Abraham Lincoln. Now, of course, that's right in the middle of the Civil War. And what was particularly important about that was that it seemed to be a way that the nation could attempt to bind itself together, at least in the view of someone like Abraham Lincoln and others who encouraged him. The nation was completely torn asunder, and what he and others thought might be possible would be to look back to a more distant, less problematic past, where people throughout America could identify with a common set of ancestors and a common historical event. So, at the worst possible moment in American history, that seemed to be an event that might be able to begin the process of healing. And that's certainly something that Sarah Josepha Hale was trying to promote as well.
Mm-hmm. Would the fact that it came during the Civil War connect at all with the selection of a New England event as a national holiday?
Well, that's interesting because the New England has been at the center of American culture and cultural production, from the very beginning. And in a way, that was problematic because sometimes the New England-based holiday of Thanksgiving was associated or had been associated with abolitionism, which made it, incredibly unpopular in the South and in some cases Southern governors would refuse to proclaim Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, in the Civil War, or following the Civil War, that association with New England could be as much a liability as anything else.
Okay.
But Sarah Josepha Hale herself tried very hard, even before the Civil War, to talk about the holiday as national and not regional. In her novel, Northwood, she said, quite specifically, this is a tale, she lays out the kind of classic classic Thanksgiving celebration. And in it she says that this is something for everyone. This is a holiday, and this is a nation that should know no north or south.
Well, Lincoln's intentions, notwithstanding in Hale's comments, then there's still an element of politics in this, and yet, again, in the material that you sent me for your new book, you say that Thanksgiving has seen its share of political contention, but less today than in the past. How is this the case, that politics was once involved and is no longer there?
Well, politics is always around in American life, but it is certainly striking. It was striking to me and surprising that holiday has become much less political in a sense than it used to be. In the early history of the Republic, and even before in the colonial period, Thanksgivings were not regular events. They weren't celebrated every year. They were only declared for particular occasions to celebrate particularly beneficial events. And so what happened was that they were associated with things that could themselves be controversial. So there could be an argument about whether something should be celebrated in a Thanksgiving or it should be mourned and commemorated with a day of fasting and humiliation. And so what this did was politicize the holiday if there was not consensus within the society. Lincoln's use of it was, in a way, a kind of politics to end all politics, to take the politics out of it, which, of course, he was privileged to do ultimately as the victor, the president of the winning side in the Civil War. But then I think Americans after the Civil War, in an effort to reconcile, invested Thanksgiving with a kind of nonpartisanism. And so what happened then in the late 1930s, when Franklin Roosevelt tried to move the traditional date of Thanksgiving, it generated all sorts of antagonism. People were just up in arms that he was moving it from the last Thursday in November to the third Thursday in November. Of course, his reasoning was that he wanted to extend the Christmas shopping season and help Americans try to perhaps spend their way out of the Depression.
How was that resolved?
Well, for a couple of years, there was a good deal of controversy from 1939 or so to 1941, when Roosevelt would often declare one day Thanksgiving, individual governors would declare another day, and so, for example, in 1931, some 22 or 23 states celebrated it on one day, some 22 or 23 celebrated it on another day a week later, and two states, Texas and Colorado, celebrated it twice. They couldn't move the day conveniently, especially in a state like Texas, because the big football game pitting, I think, Texas against Texas A&M was scheduled for the original date of Thanksgiving, and to undermine the ceremony and the importance of that game by moving it off of Thanksgiving was just unthinkable, so they just had to do it twice.
For a couple of years, then, it was worth living in Texas. You got two Thanksgivings and a football game out of it.
Absolutely. Right?
Okay. Well, another surprising comment you make, moving away from politics, is that you write that the Thanksgiving holiday has actually become less commercialized over the years. Again, that would surprise most people who think everything is becoming more commercialized.
Yeah, I think that's true actually, and what I argue in the chapter is that Thanksgiving, in a sense, inoculates us against the crass commercialism of the Christmas season. Thanksgiving is traditionally the day, or the day after Thanksgiving is the day when shopping begins and when the whole Christmas blitz began begins to really pick up steam. I think Americans really see Thanksgiving often as a kind of haven in a relentless calendar. And it's a time where we don't focus on a vast amount of consumption in the marketplace. We're not out and about. We're at home. We're sharing a meal. We're not buying gifts for each other or feel that kind of pressure. But instead, we get together. We try to, understand who we are, how we're situated in families and communities. And so in a way, it keeps us. It gives us a bit of a relief. From the commercialization of a calendar that is so obvious during Christmas. Something like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, for example, is really not about Thanksgiving. It's about Christmas. Mm-hmm. Santa Claus goes through, and really it begins that entire commercial blitz. And, Macy's is obviously behind that and hopes to benefit by having a lot of shoppers come through its doors. But it's a day, it's an event, that kind of parade and other cities around the country. It's the kind of event that is on Thanksgiving but not of Thanksgiving.
Now, let me pick up that on just a bit, because I think one of the nicest passages in what you wrote, and I hope you'll keep, in your book relates to that theme, where you say, on Thanksgiving, without fanfare or manifestos, Americans collectively shape the meaning of the occasion and the meaning of America itself, and declare their national identity simply by convening privately and voluntarily and eating turkey. I think it's a wonderful passage.
Thanks. I think that it's, I think one of the things that makes Thanksgiving so special is that it's a public and political event. It's a time when we declare our identity as Americans, but we do it in private. And so there's a lot of different ways of accomplishing that goal. We don't have any national referential event. It just happens in our houses and around the turkey. We can celebrate it in various sorts of ways, depending on what sort of ethnicity or culture we come from. So it's a way of being, in a sense, public, privately, acting religiously but in a non-sectarian way, and celebrating some of the better values of American society, reciprocity. Diversity, inclusiveness, generosity, and so forth.
Well, we can't let you off on such a high note, because as you heard in my introduction, we're going to be talking to or hearing from two Native Americans on Thanksgiving. How do they fit into this idea of yours about diversity and toleration on Thanksgiving?
In the most complicated way possible, I'm sure. And I think that's a good balance. It is the case, and this is certainly something that I emphasize in my work as well, that Thanksgivings have been celebrated for nefarious as well as beneficial events. In early New England, on a number of occasions, Thanksgivings were celebrated to celebrate the defeat of Indian allies or Indian enemies, in some cases, after really devastating massacres. And so, I think that is clearly something to be reckoned with. Thanksgiving's not like Columbus Day, though. I don't think it celebrates conquerors. What it celebrates is the possibility that people actually get along. In some ways, it celebrates the road not fully taken. After 1621. For years and years, for a generation, Pilgrims and Wampanoags and other New England Indians were able to get along pretty well. That ultimately broke down, and, we know about the tragic history and the really reprehensible history of the ways that Native people on this continent were treated by colonists and expansionists, settlers in the West.
Great.
But there's always the promise that, in fact, there are other possibilities, and those possibilities are celebrated in that first Thanksgiving in 1621.
Well, thanks. Well put, and that's the note we will end on, because we're out of time. So thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
And happy Thanksgiving.
And same to you.
Great. You've been listening to Matthew Dennis, professor of history at the University of Oregon and author of the forthcoming book, Red, White, and Blue Letter Days, Identity, Memory, and the American Calendar, to be published by Cornell University Press. There are two sides to most stories, even for those stories we recall during our national holidays. For most of us, for example, Thanksgiving is a day of celebration. For others, however, it's a day of mourning. Here to offer that perspective on Thanksgiving are Matoi Monroe and Munanam James, members of the United American Indians of New England. The UAINE has protested the annual Thanksgiving holiday by holding a national day of mourning on Thanksgiving for the past 28 years.
Every year since 1970, hundreds of Native Americans and our supporters have gathered at noon on Coles Hill in Plymouth, Massachusetts on Thanksgiving Day to observe a national day of mourning. Instead of celebrating Thanksgiving, we mourn our Native forebears who were sold into slavery, burned alive, and massacred since the arrival of the Europeans. Thanksgiving in the United States is much more than a harvest festival. It is a celebration of the Pilgrim mythology. According to that mythology, the Pilgrims arrived, the Native people fed and welcomed them, and everyone lived happily ever after. The truth is a sharp contrast to that mythology.
The Pilgrims did not find an empty land any more than Columbus discovered anything. One of the first things the Pilgrims did when they arrived on Cape Cod, before they even made it to Plymouth, was to rob Wampanoag graves at Corn Hill and steal as much of the Indians' winter provisions of corn and beans as they were able to carry. The Pilgrims were no better than any other group of European invaders when it came to their treatment of the indigenous peoples here. And no, they did not even land at that sacred shrine called Plymouth Rock, which to us is a monument to racism and oppression. The first official day of Thanksgiving was proclaimed in 1637 to celebrate the safe return of men from the Massachusetts Bay Colony who had gone to Mystic, Connecticut to participate in the massacre of more than 700 Pequot Indians.
About the only true thing in the whole mythology is that these pitiful European strangers would not have survived their first several years were it not for the aid of Wampanoag people. What Native people received in return for this help was genocide, theft of our lands, and never-ending repression. We are subject to brutal racism or treated as quaint relics from the past. When we dare to stand up for our rights, we are considered unreasonable or are attacked.
Can we give thanks as we remember Native American political prisoner Leonard Peltier, who was framed by the FBI and has been falsely imprisoned since 1976? Can we give thanks for the fact that all too many Native people live in the most abysmal poverty? Our life expectancies are much lower, our infant mortality and teen suicide rates much higher than those of white Americans. Racist stereotypes of Native people, such as those perpetuated by the Cleveland Indians and many other sports teams, persist. And every one of the more than 350 treaties that Native nations signed with the U.S. was broken by the government.
Many non-Indian people are now seeking alternatives to such holidays as Columbus Day and Thanksgiving. They are coming to the conclusion that we all must face the truth about the history of this country and the toll that history has taken on the lives of millions of indigenous, black, Latino, Asian, and poor and working class white people. That is why increasing numbers of non-Native people join us for National Day of Mourning.
The myth of Thanksgiving, served up with dollops of European superiority and manifest destiny, just does not work for many of us. As Malcolm X once said about the African-American experience in America, we did not land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. Exactly.
You've been listening to Matoi Monroe and Munanam James, members of the United American Indians of New England. And this is Talking History. Historic site of the week, we've chosen Plymouth Plantation, a recreation of the village the Pilgrims built upon their landing in the New World. The Living History Museum consists of full-size replicas of the original Mayflower, the 1627 Pilgrim Village, and the 17th century home of a Wampanoag Indian. Plymouth Plantation also offers an annual Thanksgiving dinner, an authentic feast on which Talking History's Cindy Workman is here to report.
The Plymouth Plantation serves a delicious 17th century Thanksgiving dinner each year. The dinner of black and green olives, cheese, bread of Indian corn, cheap bread, seized fish, roast fowl served up with a sauce, boiled salad, dish of Jerusalem artichokes, boiled onions, ancient New England standing dish of pompions, fermenty and prune tart is all washed down with beer, wine, or cider. The cheap bread is a simple recipe that starts out with sourdough starter that can be made with yeast and warm water, salt, and flour and left to sit for 2 to 3 days, and then mixed with water, unbleached white flour, and whole wheat flour. The sauce served on the roast fowl contains drippings from the bird combined with the oats and onions that are used in the stuffing. That is then mixed with sage, thyme, marjoram, salt, pepper, and vinegar. For more information about the historical Thanksgiving meal, contact the Plymouth Plantation in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and maybe you can plan a truly traditional meal for your next holiday.
Thank you, Cindy. And finally, turning to our list of coming attractions, at the movies next month, Wesley Snipes will star in Down in the Delta, a film directed by Maya Angelou. Angelou is famed for her many novels about what it means to be an African-American woman in the 20th century. Check your movie listings for further information. And that's it for another week of Talking History. I hope you have enjoyed our show and that you will join us next week for the first in our two-part series on the year 1968, a momentous year in American history. In the meantime, we invite you to send us your comments or suggestions either by email at talkinghistory@creighton.edu or by U.S. mail to Talking History, care of the Department of History at Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska, 68178. Until next time, from the studios of KIOS in Omaha, Nebraska, this is Brian LeBeau.